You've been listening to 93.3 WNRB Wausau. Real life, real learning, real radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning, the views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's host.
This is my boomstick!
The Mike Cannon Show.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Hello once again to your only independent, non-corporate radio program for Central Wisconsin, The Mike Cannon Show. Each week, an undisclosed location in Central Wisconsin, we bring to you voices and opinions from around the country and the world. Voices and stories that the corporate-dominated media would rather not let you know about. These programs we bring you each Monday from 2 to 6 p.m. are produced on other not-for-profit and or community radio stations worldwide. This weekly show is produced out of Glee Glee Studios West for Central Wisconsin's premier community radio station, WNRB. And, as always, the first hour of the show can be found also at radioforall.net, indymedia.org Madison, community and micropower radio stations worldwide. Up next, a short montage, a taste, a teaser, if you will, of what you'll be hearing on today's show.
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
The reality is that this conflict will go on. The United Nations resolution solves nothing, gives Lebanon nothing, gives the prisoners in Israeli dungeons nothing, and as Anne Cluid, my erstwhile colleague, was just saying, Israel has just kidnapped even more Palestinian politicians, cabinet ministers, members of parliament, and thousands of others held in Israeli dungeons, and this war will continue until the overall settlement is reached. That settlement must mean Israeli withdrawal from all occupied territory that it currently holds since the war in 1967, the release of all political prisoners, and a state for the Palestinians with East Jerusalem as its capital. No justice, no peace. You're not going out of business as a newscaster in Jerusalem anytime soon, believe me.
Well, as usual, you have prompted a huge email response both for and against you, Mr. Galloway, so we'll leave it there. I have to say that some people might find it offensive when more families are mourning their dead to hear you say that it was a bloody good hiding.
You don't give a damn. You don't even know about the Palestinian families. You don't even know that they exist. Tell me the name of one member of the seven members of the same family slaughtered on the beach in Gaza by an Israeli warship. You don't even know their name, but you know the name of every Israeli soldier who's been taken prisoner in this conflict, because you believe, whether you know it or not, that Israeli blood is more valuable than the blood of Lebanese or Palestinians. That's the truth.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, they could not be left.
Chemical weapons threat. Terrorists, dangerous, die. In turn, murders,
there are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
As of Monday, August 21st, 2006, 2,602 United States military personnel had died in Iraq since the start of the invasion. 19,270 United States military personnel had been wounded, over 9,000 of which had suffered grievous injuries such as amputations.
On the margins, struggling to make it, and in recent years falling further and further behind. So welfare reform, success, tell us more.
I'm based in Washington, D.C., and it's been very interesting in recent weeks to see Congress patting themselves on the back, talking about a job well done with regards to welfare reform, sort of lauding victory as a result of dramatic drops in caseloads. What they don't talk about so much is the fact that poverty has been rising every year since 2000, that over 5 million more people are poor today than were the case back in 2000, and that the average poor person's income is further below the poverty line than at any time in history since we've started collecting that statistic, and that's been about 30 years now.
So when we look at something like pipelines on fire, Iraq's production falling into the sand, what you're seeing is mission accomplished. Exxon is making $10 billion net profit clear every 3 months. No one has ever seen corporate profits like that since the Pharaohs.
The Ned Lamont Challenge would not have happened, let alone succeeded, without voter dissatisfaction over the Iraq War and Lieberman's relentless cheerleading for it. 60% of Americans and an overwhelming majority of Democrats want the U.S. to end its involvement in Iraq. Yet few serious leaders from either party in Washington reflect that public consensus. It's hard to find senators who will even say that Iraq has become, as in the title of Thomas E. Rick's new book, a fiasco. For over 3 years now, the operative mode in our nation's capital regarding Iraq has been denial. With a few honorable exceptions, Republicans have mimicked their president's rose-colored stay-the-course mantras, while Democrats, minus hawks like Lieberman, have preferred to talk about something, anything else.
Well, besides that, you got to remember, Russ Feingold feels the same way she does. He's constantly said the president breaks the law. He's breaking the law. So throw her right in the camp, and I always knew Russ Feingold was closer to ACLU than anything else.
All of this stuff that equivocates somebody making a decision that doesn't agree with what this administration wants and equating that with Osama bin Laden, I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of anybody who questions this administration being labeled a terrorist. It's just so much freaking nonsense.
And really getting old. Who is it helping? What's this decision? Who is this helping,
Tom? It's helping the Constitution. It's helping the Constitution being protected from an administration run amok. That's what it's helping.
Right,
and
Tom.
This will go through the court system now and probably go all the way to the Supreme Court, and then all of the Bush appointees will be able to make their decisions on its merits. So there you go.
And now, the man who doesn't misrepresent evidence to the UN, Mike Cannon.
That last little bit was from our all-hate AM radio station here in town. I'm sure it's much like most of the Fox News wannabe administration sycophant radio stations throughout the country. I bring you this to hear the vile and poison they preach, and it's pretty scary stuff. Throughout the week, this poor announcer, Tom, a moderate liberal at best, if he wants to keep his job, that is outnumbered in the studio with 3 to 4 right-wingers whose arguments are rabid and often just plain wrong. Last week, among all the outright misrepresentations, including telling us that all the 9/11 hijackers came from Pakistan, and not mentioning that 17 of the 19 hijackers actually came from Saudi Arabia, some 2,000 miles away. Pakistani, Saudia, what's the big diff? And since the devil's in the details, let's not worry about the details, since we don't want to be supporting the devil after all, now do we? And as Stephen Colbert reminds us, the facts do have a liberal bias. Last week, some 20 hours after MSN front page reported that the FBI said there is no terrorist plotting to blow up the Mackinac Bridge in Michigan, this station ran a story about how these men were seen in Anago, just a few miles away from us, buying cell phones for their devious terrorist plots. These pesky details again. 1 week later, guess what a caller to this station had to say?
The hot men in Detroit, Dearborn area is full of Muslims. Somebody from that area certainly wanted to blow up the Mackinac Bridge.
You see, that's why so many on the right still believe that they found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. All they have to do is say it enough, over and over, and they'll believe. If you say it, they will come. From the darkness, like ghosts from the woods near you. The terrorists are coming for you. Why? Because they hate your freedoms, of course. So this time the leap of faith is what the administration would like you to believe. The terrorists are coming. Be very afraid. Be very, very afraid. When they're not telling you misinformation, they use overly simplistic arguments, like how being against this administration policies equates to treason. and people of peace like Lamont actually are supporting the other side, supporting the terrorists.
And the things, the decisions that are being made here in the United States are helping the other team. How can you support that?
Of course, they fail to ask themselves what plays best in the Middle East. Some small state's nomination political runoff, where the peace guy gets 52% of the votes like Lamont did, or internationally syndicated talk shows hosting people like Ann Coulter, who say things like, we should kill all their leaders and convert them to Christianity. Our own president referring to this war as crusade. So who's motivating the terrorists? So this poor guy, Tom, fights the good fight, though outnumbered in the studio and often not very well informed himself. In this next short clip, you'll hear how his co-worker of years now thinks he's a traitor for not following hook, line, and sinker the party message. Speaks to the sad state of political dialogue in this country, doesn't it?
Tom, how do you support the fact that the terrorists like this kind of decision? Forget the administration. Just forget the administration. Just take this decision where the court is saying, you can't take a look at us at things we're doing. The terrorists like this decision.
What the terrorists like or dislike has nothing to do with this argument.
It does, too.
It really does. What we're talking about is America and American policy and the way we want America to be, not what the terrorists like or dislike.
You are ACLU.
Tom, let me put it in your ballpark, okay? You're a baseball coach. You've got a team. You're playing against another team. What the other team thinks and does and acts and how they play the game impacts on how your game is played. And all I'm saying is, you know, the United States is playing a war game with another country. And the decisions that are being made here in the United States are helping the other team. How can you support that?
That's your position.
You're supporting
helping
it. You're supporting the other team.
I just shake my head when I hear stuff like that. And it's the talking point. We're going to hear it until Election Day, that if you disagree with this administration, you're supporting a terrorist.
No, you can disagree, Tom.
Apparently not in this country anymore.
It's beyond disagreement. It's treason.
Yep, Tom, this Little League baseball coach and friend for years, is now a traitor to his country. Now, I can understand some random peace protester being vilified, but your own coworker being nothing more than a traitor? And you wonder how the Nazis were able to get 95% of the Germans to love their country, love their nation so much. A quick clip from the righteousness of the right-wing callers to the show. Answering the question for us, who would Jesus hate? I guess they have a big bag of first stones to throw. As a side note, the guy that accused Tom of being a traitor for disagreeing with him, the holier-than-thou, this family man who has children in college, none of them serving in the military, of course. Well, just a few years ago, this family man, after leaving a local strip joint, well, he crashed his motorcycle while driving home drunk. I see EIB Network in his future. Rush will be more than proud to bring him into the Excellence in Broadcasting family.
The difference is being gay is one thing. Being gay in a relationship is another. Being gay, you can be gay and be a Christian. I really feel that way. It's when you take in the moral acts. You know, you didn't hear Christ say, lay with that man. Sodom and Gomorrah got hammered because they had the homosexual and lesbian affairs as part of everything else.
Well, he says it's an abomination. There's no two ways.
You look at some of those things, and again, it's not the individual, it's the action that is
blotted. All I'm saying is that these people that are calling themselves Christian Democrats should stand back and take a look and say, okay, what am I really standing for? I have no problem with saying you're a religious Democrat, but if you're going to group yourself into a group that is a follower of Christ, then you better know what Christ stood for.
Boy, you're really rolling today, Tom.
Thank you for taking my call.
Equating the Democratic Party as being a non-Christian party, that's something. Boy, you're unbelievable today.
I guess there's quite a few of them, huh?
Jesus taught in the Bible that if you hate someone, it's the same as murder. And if you think the sin in your mind, it's the same as doing it. Jesus himself taught that.
Right, and that's why we're constantly in prayer for forgiveness.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm talking about is a homosexual, a non-repentive homosexual, if you have even have those thoughts, and you don't repent of them, you're sinning.
Yeah. But there are a lot of things in the Bible that, you know, turn back on themselves, and we don't take literally anymore. I mean, certainly.
That's the one, though. Oh,
there isn't. All right, then
where is it? Well, I guess, do you remember the Mary Magdalene, or not maybe Mary Magdalene, but the prostitute that the Lord, you know, drew the line in the sand, and...
Deuteronomy 22, verses 21 through 22. If, however, the charge is true and no proof of the young woman's virginity can be found, she shall be brought to the door of her father's house, and there the men of the town shall stone her to death. She has done an outrageous thing in Israel by being promiscuous while still in her father's house. You must purge the evil from among you.
Yep, everything in the Bible must be taken literally these days. I hope to God Almighty that the guy who called had moral daughters who never had premarital sex in his house, lest we take the Bible literally and stone her to death, of course. I wonder what the punishment is for premarital homosexual sex. I don't even want to go there, man. I could go on with proof about how scary the All Hate AM radio stations are getting. However, today we'll conclude with these quick observations. A couple of callers commented that if you don't have anything to hide, why not let the government eavesdrop on us? After all, shouldn't our security be top priority? I also wonder why, when they wanted to put taggots in the gunpowder, they didn't allow law enforcement to do that. This way, that law enforcement could follow the crime scene and, of course, terrorism better as well. And I also wonder why they don't want to register guns at gun shows. After all we need is a gun show in Detroit where all those bad Muslims live and buy all those guns and shoot up a mall somewhere. If security is so important, why wouldn't the right-wingers want to do this? Could it have something to do with the NRA? We conclude today's visit through the All Hate AM radio ban by refuting once again some comments made.
The matter is, Tom, why? You said, don't, you got to prove to me the wiretap thing works. Well, prove to me it hurts because they've been doing it. Why isn't there a whole backload of cases from the ACLU saying it is being abused?
Well, first of all, they can't get the information because of the quote-unquote national right. security ties right. that are being put on everything. Right. But, you know, somebody said it could be abused in the future, certainly. I mean, we got these people that say, I don't care if they're listening to my phone calls. Well, what if you're one of those anti-war protesters? What if you're one of those people who
are taking this bridge when we get there? Yeah.
There has, of course, been many, many lawsuits filed against the NSA spying thing, including the surveillance of peace groups from Pittsburgh to the raging grannies in the state of Washington, where the U.S. Joint Terrorism Task Force was looking into them. By the way, you have to be over 60 to join the Raging Grannies. Not sure if you really have to be a grandmother, though.
We conclude today's walkthrough of the All Hate AM radio dial. It's safe to take out your nose plugs now.
Sit back, relax, breathe in. Slowly, there you go. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
I'm going to talk to you. I've got a customer in the back.
All right, put the choir on for 10 minutes. What is it?
What is it? You'll never guess who's here. Who's here? You're not gonna believe me. You're gonna think I've been drinking. All right, who's here? Christ and Moses. Are you putting me on now? I'm telling you they're here. Are you sure it's them? Well, I've just seen them in pictures, but I'm pretty sure it's them. Moses is a ringer for Charlton Heston, and I'm sure. Where are they standing? In the back. Don't look now, you idiot. They can see us. Christ and Moses, both of you. They're way in the back. Did Christ bring the family? What's his mother's name? That's weird. I read the book today, too. I'm so nervous. Mary. Mary what? I don't know. Mary Hale? No. Mary Hale. Hail Mary? Harry Mary? No, I don't know what that looks. Oh, yeah. Hail Mary. Oh, Hail Mary, full of grace, Thompson. They're very thick with the DuPonts. I know. Montauk Point. They're back here, yes. All right, that's something. If this ever gets around now, it has. Oh, Christ, don't look in the front door. The lepers are coming. All right. Sir, would you take the bell off, please? Thank you very much. Wait, mister, will you pick up your leg? Madam, your nose, your dry. Thank you. They got Sophie Tucker with Moses posing. Take that Hebrew national banner down. Mr. Jess, will you get off the Madonna? That's not a stat. All right, give me a direct line to Rome, quickly. Rome. All right. Hello. John Fran in New York. Listen, a couple of kids dropped in, and, yeah, you know them. Well, I can't really talk right now. Excuse me. Hello, we're from Newsweek, and we want to know if they have State Department clearance, and is that really them? Yes, it is them. Sonny, get off my hand. Yes, that is them, dear, yes. I don't know if they're going to do any tricks today. I don't know. Yes, they can fly. No, Mary Martin isn't God's mother, and get the hell out of here now. Hello. You know them. One kid is, well, I'll... With a cross of bop. No, not Zorro. Damn, that's right. He brought a very attractive Jewish boy with him. Oh, he got to do something. Well, I know, I can't put him up at your place. No, I didn't paint or anything. Oh, I got a lot of kids staying over here. Look, what are we paying protection for? That's right. Just get him over here, that's all. Yeah. I don't want to hear about that. Look, all I know is that we're up to our ass in crutches and wheelchairs. Is that good enough for you? The place is ridiculous here. Yeah. They're in the back. Way in the back. Of course they're white. Yeah. Yeah. This is New York. Puerto Ricans stand in the back. That's right. I don't know. Which ones are they, Sheen? The ones that are glowing. Yeah.
Not long afterwards, Bruce was arrested in San Francisco for uttering a profanity on stage. This is Lenny's creative way of conveying the experience to a later concert audience.
The bust. What I got arrested for in San Francisco. San Francisco, I got arrested for... what do you think? We can hear that, Daddy. I'm not going to repeat the word because I want to finish the gig here tonight. It's, they said it was vernacular for a favorite homosexual practice, a 10-letter word. It's really chic. That's 2 four-letter words and a preposition. I can't, I wish I could tell you the word. It's, starts with a C. Well, you know what the word is. Now, it's weird how they manifested that word as homosexual. Because I don't. That relates to any contemporary chick I know, or would love, or would marry, you know. And, now, when I took the bus, I finished the show, I said that word, you know, the 10-letter word, and he comes over and says, Lenny, my name is Sergeant Blah Blah. You know the word you said? I said a lot of words that time. Well, that word. Oh, yeah. Well, Lenny, that's against the law to take it down. Okay, that's cool. It's against the law to say it and to do it. Well, I didn't do it, man. I know, but I just have to tell you that all the time. Okay. All right. Now, I'm getting in the way again. And the one, he's cool, because he said, you broke the law, and specifically this thing. Now, the other guy, look, I got a wife and kid. I don't want to hear that crap at all, man. I don't want to get involved emotionally with this. What do you mean I want to hear that crap? Do I have to do that to you? Bam, then it got very sticky. No. You ever say the word no? Never said honest to God, never said the word never. How long you married? 18 years. You ever chip your new wife? Never. Never one time in 18 years you chip it down your old lady? Never one time. Then I love you. Because you're a spiritual guy, but if you're lying, you'll spend some dead time in purgatory. Now, we really got really into it. Now, in the court, the same bus, the judge, Aaron Avramitz, a red-headed junkyard Jew, a real forbissiner with thick fingers and a homemade glass eye. Tough folk, right? He comes in, blah, blah, blah. Swear the heat in. What'd he say? Your Honor, he said blah, blah, blah. The judge. He said, blah, blah, blah. Then the guy really yented it up. That's right. I didn't believe it. There was a guy up on the stage in front of women in a mixed audience saying, blah, blah, blah. The judge. Well, this I never heard. Blah, blah, blah. Said, blah, blah, blah. He said, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to lie to you. It's in the minutes. I'm not going to lie to you. All right. The DA. The guy said, blah, blah, blah. Look at him. He's smug. He's not going to repent. Then they dug something. They sort of like saying, blah, blah, blah. Because they said it a few extra times. Oh, look, do me a favor, too, because just this is very
and now, the man whose superpowers include talking to squirrels, Mike Cannon.
Thought I'd lighten it up a bit after our All Hate AM radio swill, so I hope you enjoyed that classic Lenny Bruce comedy. This Lenny Bruce segment was brought to you courtesy of the program called Echoes of the Century, which airs every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. on this very WNRB community radio station. Again, that's Echoes of the Century from 9 to 10 a.m. on WNRB, your Central Wisconsin community radio station. Up next, a show I try to bring you each week, Eat the State, is produced out of Seattle, Washington, and is a kind of a lefty week in review report. You'll often hear things on Eat the State that the mainstream media does not bother to cover. That's what we try to do for you each Monday from 2 to 6 p.m. on this Mike Cannon Show. re-bringing alternative voices from around the country, voices and opinions you'll not hear on the All Hate AM radio dial, nor the network television, nor read in your out-of-state-owned, quote, local, unquote, newspapers. Here's Eat the State, and as always, thanks for listening.
It is 8:31. We have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Lieutenant Aaron Watata had a hearing on Thursday.
Yes, he did. And it was, from all accounts, I was not there, but a pretty amazing event. Among other people, Francis Boyle, who's the longtime international law professor from the University of Illinois, who's written extensively on civil disobedience and, you know, the right to, you know, refuse cooperation with illegal government orders, basically. He testified. Anne Wright, who's the former U.S. diplomat who was in charge of the U.S., I don't know if it was an embassy at the time or a mission or what it was at, in Afghanistan. And then Dennis Holliday, the former former U.N. figure who was involved with the Iraq Oil for Food program. And they all spoke very eloquently about the situation in Iraq at the time of the U.S. invasion, that the U.S. invasion was basically done on a pretext of lies, that, you know, the Congress was given inaccurate information at the time the war was authorized. And not only inaccurate information, but information that was intentionally deceptive. And, you know, what they're trying to do legally is make the case that the war itself is illegal and that, therefore, Lieutenant Watata is legally justified in refusing orders to deploy there. Now, this, mind you, is in an Army court, so I think probably the chances of his winning are not very high. You don't have a long history in military courts of people successfully arguing that a war is illegal. But it's real significant that, number one, these arguments are being made and being made by very credible people, and number two, that you're getting extensive media coverage of this. So it's really quite a remarkable case, and we've got it, you know, going on pretty close to home here in Fort Lewis. It's a nationally very significant case, just as last week the announcement of Sergeant Ricky Clausing that he was turning himself in after having basically deserted after a tour in Iraq where he worked as an interrogations officer in an infantry division. He turned himself in at the Vets for Peace conference here. He announced it last week, and then he turned himself in the following day at Fort Lewis a week ago yesterday. So that case is also going to be unfolding. I think he was transferred back to Fort Bragg for disciplinary measures there, but we want to keep an eye on that case as well.
All right. Jump into national. Big news this week when a judge ordered that warrantless wiretaps were unconstitutional.
Yeah, Judge Anna Riggs Taylor, elderly African-American judge in Detroit, basically handed the Bush administration their head on a platter. The Bush folks didn't lose everything. And in fact, one of the things that was not emphasized in the coverage was that Judge Taylor upheld the argument that the State Secrets Act covered the ability of the Bush administration to not divulge details of the data mining program that the NSA has been doing on domestic telephone calls. But the warrantless spying episode, the one that originally reported by the New York Times last December and that they sat on since prior to the November 2004 election, is not covered by the State Secrets Act, Judge Taylor ruled. Judge Taylor also ruled that not only was it not covered by the State Secrets Act, it was also not covered, as the Justice Department had argued, by the authorization of the use of military force, which is the congressional authorization for the war in Iraq. She threw all that out. She ruled that the warrantless spying program was an egregious violation of the Fourth Amendment, also a violent violation of the First Amendment, therefore unconstitutional, that it also violated the FISA Act of 1978, that it also violated separation of powers. And she used very, very strong language in saying all this. Now, of course, the Justice Department immediately appealed this. This is almost certainly going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, where Republican-appointed justices hold a majority, and it's been obviously pretty heavily politicized along those lines in the past. So This may or may not stand in the long term, and probably by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, we're going to be very close to the 2008 election. But this initial ruling, anyway, is a very, very strong setback for the Bush administration, and particularly because this is the first time that a judicial ruling that almost exclusively looks at the Bush administration's argument of the unitary executive theory, that essentially that Bush is above the law. We saw that a little bit with the Guantanamo Bay ruling, that the military tribunals were illegal, that Bush couldn't carry that out. But this is a case where Bush has said specifically that he can ignore the FISA law whenever he wants because it's a matter of national security, and that trumps everything for the commander-in-chief. And that has been thrown out completely by this federal court. It's a really quite a sharp setback for Bush, and it also is a real reinforcement of the argument that Bush is proud carrying out of this program repeatedly over a period of a number of years, and proud advocacy for it is an impeachable offense, that he has knowingly violated the law. So we'll see where this goes.
All right. Well, speaking of thrown out completely, there are some people down in New Orleans that look like they have their insurance coverage thrown out completely.
Yeah, this actually, the ruling was in Mississippi, but it covers Katrina victims in both Mississippi and Louisiana. Of course, the anniversary of Katrina is coming up on August 29th in a little over a week, so we're going to be hearing a lot more about Katrina in the days to come. But this is a particularly egregious ruling and a bad one. Another U.S. District Judge, a guy named L.T. Sender Jr., ruled basically that hundreds and hundreds of households, probably affecting thousands of people, did not have insurance policies. The insurance industry had gone to court to fight this, claiming that they didn't need to pay damages because their policies did not cover, quote, wind-blown water damage, which, of course, is what damages things in a hurricane. So why get insurance on the Gulf Coast if you have an insurance policy that doesn't cover hurricane damage? Well, you know, insurance companies, very much like health insurance companies that don't really want to insure sick people, insurance companies would love to wriggle out of having to insure people in high-risk geographic areas because of natural disasters. That is what has happened here. So now you've got hundreds of households in Mississippi and Louisiana that are having, you know, had their homes badly damaged or destroyed, that are not going to have any recourse to insurance public policies that they thought would cover this. It's you know, once again, you know, more evidence that these victims simply aren't being taken care of. And what was more appalling is that this ruling was not widely publicized. The place where it got the most attention was in the business pages of various newspapers, and it was presented in the heading of, you know, great news for the insurance industry, and stocks are up, you know, which again is demonstrates the complete disconnect between what's good for global capitalism and what's good for actual, you know, people. So there you go.
All right. How about an Abramoff update?
Yeah, Robert Nye, the embattled congressman from Ohio, who has all but been indicted, his chief of staff has already pled guilty in the Abramoff scandal, withdrew from his reelection race in Ohio this week, which is the first time, unless you count Tom DeLay, who had some other legal problems as well, the first time that a congressman has been taken down by the Abramoff scandal, and he probably won't be the last.
All right. And Arlen Specter and Charles Grassley are...
Yes, Republican senators. Specter heads the Justice Committee. Grassley heads the Finance Committee. And they have sent a very strongly worded and nasty letter to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Why? What is wrong with the FCC in the eyes of Republicans? Well, apparently, Republicans are distancing themselves from the Bush administration as fast as they can. The SEC's problem in this case is that they failed to adequately investigate a financial scandal involving the Pequot Capital Management, which PCM is a hedge fund on Wall Street. And it turns out the major reason the SEC treated PCM with kid gloves is that several high-level executives that were involved in this particular scandal were also heavily involved in the George W. Bush re-election fundraising efforts. In other words, it was a politically motivated, you know, hands-off kind of decision, and politically motivated in the sense that people who apparently violated the law pretty egregiously were closely connected to the Bush administration, and therefore they didn't get seriously investigated. And the ranking Republican senators are upset about this, which tells you just how egregious it must have been.
All right, and finally, nationally, the Interior Department has some plans for Alaska.
Yeah, you may remember last week when the Prudhoe Bay pipelines were shut down by BP because they were leaking all over the North Slope tundra. Well, the Interior Department, only a week later, in a finely timed sense of irony, has asked to open a vast area of environmentally sensitive wetlands in a place called Lake Teshikpuk, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, on the north slope of Alaska, very close to Prudhoe Bay. It's the same oil field, basically. They want to open it to new oil drillings, even though opponents are pointing toward corroding pipelines to the east in Prudhoe Bay as a reason to keep the area off limits, which it currently has been. So the Bush administration, as with Anwar, is just pushing right ahead to try and, try and open new areas to oil drilling there, even though we're in the midst of an environmental scandal where the corroding pipelines have been leaking oil into the tundra for years and years and years, and it's finally come to the public's attention.
All right, jump into international Lebanon.
Yeah, we have a tenuous ceasefire in place. Our fantasy president is claiming that Israel won the war. Funny thing that nobody in the Middle East thinks Israel won the war, including everyone in Israel and the Israeli government, including all the Arab governments, certainly including Hezbollah. Turns out that the Israeli military never did manage to get very far into Lebanon. They certainly didn't get the 18-mile barrier that they wanted to get, and they certainly didn't disempower Hezbollah. Hezbollah is pretty much intact, Hezbollah is certainly not in the process of nor planning to disarm, as the UN Security Council has demanded. But then again, they're defying UN order, and as the Lebanese government defied the UN Security Council order a couple of years ago to disarm Hezbollah themselves, in their case they really couldn't because Hezbollah was stronger than the Lebanese army. But this is done in the context of Israel's having repeatedly violated the Lebanese border over the last 6 years since its withdrawal, both those violations and its original occupation of Lebanon for 18 years between 1982 and 2000 were violations of UN Security Council resolutions. So is the Israeli occupation of the nearby Golan Heights, which is part of the Syrian involvement of in this whole mess and its support for Hezbollah. So of course there are all the Israeli resolutions having to do with occupation of the military the occupied territories in Palestine over the years. So we're getting a lot of coverage of Hezbollah and Lebanon refusing to obey UN Security Council resolutions. They ain't the only ones. Israel has got a long, long track record of doing exactly the same thing. We have President Fantasyland here in Washington thinking the exact opposite happened than actually happened, which should remind you of another Middle East country where he's been making those pronouncements for the last 3 years. Israel also legally extended the kidnapping of the Palestinian Authority speaker, a Hamas member named Abd al-Aziz Dweik. We have, as of the ceasefire, reports that up to 30,000 Lebanese homes have been destroyed by Israeli bombing. That according to a UN aid official. Of course, that doesn't include, apartment buildings. It doesn't include commercial buildings. It certainly doesn't include all the infrastructure that was bombed. Oddly enough, it's Hezbollah primarily that has launched into reconstruction of the area. Now, the U.S., the Bush administration is saying, well, we recognize that Hezbollah is going to get a lot of credibility with the Lebanese for doing all of this reconstruction, so we want to get right in there and do some reconstruction. destruction also. How much to compete with Hezbollah? Well, they don't have people on the ground there the way that Hezbollah does. They certainly don't have any credibility having obstructed a ceasefire for nearly a month and allowed Israel to do all this destruction. But they've set aside some money for it. How much have they set aside? $50 million. Now this is 1/400th of the amount of money that the U.S. set aside for reconstruction in Iraq, and we know how effective that was. So don't hold your breath on this one, but that's probably another $50 million down the drain for the fiscally conservative Republicans. And then last but not least, just a thought. The U.S. wants to compete with the reconstruction because it doesn't want to come out of all this with a bad image in the Middle East. Well, maybe they should have thought of that before they invaded Iraq. Maybe they should have thought of that before siding with Israel, not just in this war, but for the last 40 years. The damage is pretty complete at this point.
All right. Iraq.
Still going to heck in a handbasket as of September. August 11th, the U.S. military unveiled a strategy to build walls between neighborhoods in Baghdad to try and keep the sectarian violence down, to keep adjacent neighborhoods that are, Sunni or Shiite from attacking and killing each other. Well, this is very reminiscent of another area where another imperial power has built a massive wall in the Middle East, that, of course, in Israel. And so that's going to go over great with the Israelis. They're first doing that in the Dora neighborhood of Baghdad, where there's been a lot of bloodshed, but it's really not clear what that's going to accomplish, particularly because there was also a very interesting report in Tuesday's Washington Post that sectarian civil war isn't just in Baghdad anymore. That's spreading out to the communities in Diyala province, which is to the north and east of Baghdad in particular, but also a number of other areas in central Iraq where, again, you've got Sunni and Shiite villages attacking each other with mortar fire with militias. You got death squads going out. So it's not just in Baghdad that we're seeing the disintegration in a civil war. And the U.S. military seems pretty helpless to do anything about it.
All right, and then moving over to Afghanistan.
Yeah, some stuff we didn't get to last week. We have a fresh scandal in Afghanistan where on the 29th of May in a place called Khair Khana, a district of North Kabul, you have photographs that have now been released, 20 of them that appear to show a group of up to 4 unarmed Afghan civilians being killed by gunfire from an American Humvee. This, of course, being yet another PR coup for the occupying forces. By the way, that report was in British media, not U.S. media. You also have a report this week that opium production in Afghanistan is up 40% to its highest levels in recorded history. And you'll recall, of course, that when we came in 2001 and displaced the Taliban, we did it primarily through the CIA and through using a proxy army, the Northern Alliance, which was primarily composed, that's it, of old warlords who had been heavily into poppy and opium production in the old days prior to the Taliban, as well as being involved in a lot of war crimes. So it's like, between the CIA and the warlords, are we really surprised that opium production and poppy production in Afghanistan is a booming business? And that's the spread of democracy in Afghanistan for this week.
All right. Talking, as we do every week, with Jav Parish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
At www.eatthestate.org. And if you have questions, comments...
And
tips.
Now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
That was Eat the State out of Seattle, Washington. And if you'd like to get a hold of me at the Mike Cannon Show, you can do that by contacting me at the following email address. Just type The Mike Cannon Show at hotmail.com. Cannon is spelled with two N's. Again, that's all one word, The Mike Cannon Show at hotmail.com. Coming up next, by popular demand, I'm going to bring you the entire 9-minute segment from Sky News in England, Sky News being Britain's Rupert Murdoch's English equivalent of Fox News, which has the same reputation about being fair and balanced as Fox News does here in the United States. Here you'll be hearing an interview between British MP George Galloway and Sky News reporter who tries to one-up Mr. Galloway. Mr. Galloway being able to hand this reporter's butt on a silver platter. Here's that unedited 9-minute interview. Thanks for tuning in to this Mike Cannon Show, your independent media radio program for Central Wisconsin.
Joining me now is a man not known for sitting on the fence. He passionately opposed the invasion of Iraq, and now he feels that Hezbollah is justified in attacking Israel. The Respect MP for Bethnal Green is in our central London studio. A very good evening, a good morning rather to you, Mr. Galloway. How do you justify your support for Hezbollah and its leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah?
A preposterous way to introduce an item, and what a preposterous first question. 24 years ago, on the day my daughter was born, and I've just celebrated her 24th birthday, I had to dash to the maternity hospital to see her given birth from a mass demonstration in London against the Israeli invasion and occupation of Lebanon. Israel has been invading and occupying Lebanon all of my 24-year-old daughter's life. The Hezbollah are a part of the Lebanese national resistance who are trying to drive, having successfully driven most Israelis from their land in 2000, Israel from the rest of their land, and to get back those thousands of Lebanese prisoners who were kidnapped by Israel under the terms of their illegal occupation of Lebanon. It's Israel that's invading Lebanon. It's Israel that's attacking Lebanon, not Lebanon that's attacking Israel. You've just been carrying a report of 10 Israeli soldiers on the border getting ready to invade Lebanon, and you ask us to mourn that operation as if it were some kind of war crime. Israel is invading Lebanon and has killed 30 times more Lebanese civilians than have died in Israel. So it's you who should be justifying the evident bias which is written on every line on your face and is in every nuance of your voice, and is loaded in every question that you ask.
Right. You put your finger on the button, though, didn't you, when you said that Hezbollah was set up back in the 1980s in order to remove every Israeli soldier from Lebanese soil. As you said, it achieved that in 2000.
No, it didn't.
This is a setback.
No, it didn't. It didn't. This is a key point that you're concealing from your viewers. Israel was forced out of most of the south of Lebanon in 2000. It still occupies a part of Lebanon since 2000.
The Shebra Farms area, which is subject to this latest UN draft resolution.
Thousands of Lebanese prisoners have been kidnapped by Israel. Hezbollah and the Lebanese government want them to be released.
I spoke just a moment ago to the Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman, who said that the three Lebanese who have been captured, perhaps you'd like to use that word, have been before a judge.
These are not the prisoners.
And been through a court of law.
Oh, please, have a slightly longer memory than 4 weeks. I'm talking about the thousands of prisoners taken during the 18 years of Israeli occupation, illegal occupation of South Lebanon. These are the prisoners that have to be released in exchange for the Israeli soldiers that were captured at the beginning of this wave of the crisis.
Can I ask you about a report that's in today's Sunday Telegraph, which showed that Iran has given Hezbollah long-range missiles capable of targeting any part of Israel. Iran, according to this Iranian MP who helped found Hezbollah, has also said that Iran has given the authorization to target Tel Aviv. Can you blame Israel for wanting to destroy those missiles?
But this is preposterous. America has given Israel missiles that can target not just every city in Lebanon, but every city in the Arab and Muslim world, including Iran. Why should America be allowed to give long-range missiles to Israel, including hundreds of nuclear missiles, but Iran
because
is not allowed to give
missiles? Because it's given it to a terrorist organization.
But they're not a terrorist organization. Only in the mind of Rupert Murdoch's Sky and the Times and the Sun and the News of the World.
I'm going to stop you there, Mr. Galloway. Prescribed terrorist organizations. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. We know that perfectly well. In most people's eyes, they are deemed to be...
They
had a choice, didn't they? Let's understand this. They had a choice, like the IRA,
to take on politics. No, nothing to do with the IRA. Listen, Anna.
I'm saying they had a choice
you're
to absorb the idea of politics. They've got two Hezbollah cabinet ministers.
Anna, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. You are totally wrong in saying that in most people's eyes, Hezbollah are terrorists. In most people's eyes, Israel is a terrorist state. It's the fact that you cannot comprehend that fact that leads to the bias which runs through all of your reporting and every question that you've asked me in this interview.
Can I ask you one question? I was relating to the IRA and Sinn Féin. They have decided to embrace politics. Hezbollah had the chance to embrace politics. They've already got two cabinet ministers. They're well respected in the South.
In politics. They are.
That's what I'm saying. If you listen to me, I'm saying they've got two cabinet ministers already. They had a chance to do that. Why did they need to capture and kill Israeli soldiers on the border? Surely that sets back
because
their ambitions to be a political force inside a democratic Lebanon.
Look, because Israel occupies their country and holds thousands of their compatriots as kidnapped hostages in their dungeons. It's really very simple. Except if you think only in a clock that goes back 4 weeks. If you know, and you're old enough to know better, that this origins of this conflict are not 4 weeks or 4 years or 14 years, but are decades old. You want people to think that the crisis started when the clock started ticking on Sky News.
No, I don't
the people
at all.
In Lebanon know differently.
Yeah, I want to ask you one final question. Do you think that the 4 weeks that we've seen, as you mentioned, the 26 days of this crisis, has set back Hezbollah's ambitions? Not only are Israeli soldiers now over the border... Let me finish. Would you mind letting me finish, please? Not only are Israeli soldiers over the border in sizable numbers, but also their claims to be a good political organization to help a democratic Lebanese government with the Syrians who've also now left an independent state, that has also come to blows as well.
What a silly question. What a silly person you are. Hezbollah is winning the war. You can see it on the other half of the screen. Hezbollah is more popular today.
That was not my question.
Hezbollah is more popular today in Lebanon amongst Christians, amongst Sunnis, amongst Shiites, amongst all Arabs, amongst all Muslims, than it has ever been. It's Israel who's lost the war, and Bush and Blair, for politically organizing the war, who've lost politically. This is a defeat for Bush and Blair and Israel. Everybody but you can see it.
Let me separate out that question then. Is it a setback, given that Hezbollah was set up in order to get Israeli soldiers off Lebanese soil, that there are now more Israeli soldiers on Lebanese soil than there were 26 days ago?
Well, they seem to be getting a bloody good hiding on the other half of the screen that I'm watching. Maybe you can't see it, but I'm watching them getting a bloody good hiding in the war. So if that's a success, I'm not sure what a failure would look like. The reality is that this conflict will go on. The United Nations resolution solves nothing, gives Lebanon nothing, gives the prisoners in Israeli dungeons nothing, and as Anne Cluid, my erstwhile colleague, was just saying, Israel has just kidnapped even more Palestinian politicians, cabinet ministers, members of parliament, and thousands of others held in Israeli dungeons, and this war will continue until the overall settlement is reached. That settlement must mean Israeli withdrawal from all occupied territory that it currently holds since the war in 1967, the release of all political prisoners, and a state for the Palestinians with East Jerusalem as its capital. No justice, no peace. You're not going out of business as a newscaster in Jerusalem anytime soon, believe me.
Well, as usual, you have prompted a huge email response both for and against you, Mr. Galloway, so we'll leave it there. I have to say that some people might find it offensive when more families are mourning their dead to hear you say that it was a bloody good hiding.
You don't give a damn. You don't even know about the Palestinian families. You don't even know that they exist. Tell me the name of one member of the seven members of the same family slaughtered on the beach in Gaza by an Israeli warship. You don't even know their name, but you know the name of every Israeli soldier who's been taken prisoner in this conflict, because you believe, whether you know it or not, that Israeli blood is more valuable than the blood of Lebanese or Palestinians. That's the truth.
You know you only had one shot to make it right, to do the right thing. So listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
An exercise in power. This is Jav Parrish. I'm finally back home in Seattle after a 7,000-mile round-trip road journey to Maine and back. The return half, fueled by all the hot air flowing from national commentary in the wake of Ned Lamont's victory over Joe Lieberman in the Connecticut primary. The Ned Lamont challenge would not have happened, let alone succeeded, without voter dissatisfaction over the Iraq War and Lieberman's relentless cheerleading for it. 60% of Americans and an overwhelming majority of Democrats want the U.S. to end its involvement in Iraq, yet few serious leaders from either party in Washington reflect that public consensus. It's hard to find senators who will even say that Iraq has become, as in the title of Thomas E. Rick's new book, a fiasco. For over 3 years now, the operative mode in our nation's capital regarding Iraq has been denial. With a few honorable exceptions, Republicans have mimicked their president's rose-colored stay-the-course mantras, while Democrats, minus hawks like Lieberman, have preferred to talk about something, anything else. Lamont's win suddenly presents a very real political threat to all those folks' cozy no-bid contracts, pork-laden emergency appropriations, and country club games of Stratego. But voter anger in Connecticut and elsewhere isn't just about a war sold with lies and executed with cruelty and incompetence. It's also about the refusal of our elected representatives to do anything about it once it became obvious that it was all going awry. And it's about their continuing bipartisan refusal to do anything even when the public came to a majority conclusion that the whole thing was a misbegotten mess. And even that wouldn't resonate so strongly if it weren't so reminiscent of government failures to act on our nation's health care crises, the ballooning deficit, the catastrophe that is public education, and on and on. In other words, Ned Lamont's victory wasn't just an indictment of war policy. It was also an indictment of the complete lack of responsiveness and accountability that has characterized both the executive branch and Congress, both parties, for years. D.C. business as usual has come to mean not dealing with the nation's problems by trying to find solutions, however flawed, but instead feeding a bipartisan corporate oligarchy while lying to the public and hoping to distract us from our problems with fake issues like gay marriage, flag burning, or the ludicrously renamed death tax. That is why Ned Lamont's victory scared the permaclass running our nation's capital. That small, incestuous circle of legislators, lobbyists, think tanks, and corporate donors knows it can only be taken down in one way, by the will of the voters. And while come November, incumbents will still have every advantage this year, we now know, each of us, in every state and every congressional district, that our local D.C. business-as-usual hack can be beaten. If it doesn't happen this November, there's plenty of time for 2008. That's why all the hysteria and hot air from Beltway people who know better. It's not that they don't recognize that voters, properly motivated, can bring down this whole corrupt charade of corporate democracy. It's that they don't want you to recognize it. Because if you, which is to say we, understand that the ultimate electoral power really does belong to us, we're capable of ending a lot more than just the war in Iraq. From KBCS, for the Pacifica Network, this is Jock Parrish.
You are listening to a radio. Because of the time it takes for radio to travel to Earth from distant sources, radio astronomers are able to see the universe as it appeared more than 10 billion years ago. The artificial radio broadcast you are listening to now portrays the universe as it was just 1 second ago. Stay current. Listen to the Mike Cannon Show.